everyone, and welcome to the Dallas Soccer Show. I'm Dustin Nation. This episode will be our season preview episode, and we're lucky enough to be joined by the managing editor of Big D Soccer, Drew Epperle. Drew's been at Big D since the beginning, which means he's been around FC Dallas for a little while. Drew and I talked a little bit about his role there at Big D, and then we previewed 2018 for FC Dallas, everywhere from the players to the strategy to the schedule. We covered quite a bit. I don't want to keep you waiting any longer, so here's my conversation with Drew Epperle. The Dallas Soccer Show, your source of FC Dallas banter and U.S. Men's National Team news and coverage. Hey, Drew, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
So I thought we'd start off with just to kind of talk a little bit more about Big D Soccer. I know it's one of the mainstays in the FC Dallas media world. But then we'll kind of do a pretty comprehensive season preview. Get your thoughts on some of the transactions, some of the off-season action, and kind of give it a little look ahead. So you game?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Awesome. So your title at Big D Soccer is managing editor. What does that mean?
It's a fancy term, I guess, in some capacities, but I mainly, you know, manage the day-to-day operations of Big D Soccer. Big D Soccer is a subsidiary of Vox Media and SB Nation. They have hundreds of blogs on SB Nation, as some people might know by now. It's been around for a while. Big D Soccer itself, I think, started back in 2010 by Daniel Robertson. He brought me in pretty much as it hit the network, and we kind of hit the ground running on that front shortly after FC Dallas went to an MLS Cup and tried to ride the wave of that season. And we've been doing it ever since. Daniel's obviously gone on to bigger and better things. He's over in Italy with Juventus now, but you know, he had a few years with FC Dallas before leaving last year to go to Seattle and then over to Italy. But it's been a fun gig, and you know, I've been happy to do it. I started a soccer blog back in 2007 called WV Hooligan. Haven't really kept up with it the last few years because of Big D Soccer, but you know, I've been around the MLS world for you know 10 plus years now, so I feel like I've seen the league grow and expand beyond even what I thought would actually happen. So it's been a lot of fun.
Does the WV stand for West Virginia?
Yeah. So I'm originally from West Virginia. Grew up there. Went to school at West Virginia University and moved down here shortly after. Met my wife while we were on an internship here in Dallas, and knew I wanted to get here pretty quickly. So I've been a fan of this town ever since I've been here. I love living here, and wouldn't trade it for anything, really.
Yeah, my parents are from Texas, and they told me that since I moved here, they said that you weren't bored here, but you got here as soon as you could.
Yeah, I've heard that from a lot of people.
Jason said that most of the positions are volunteer. Is the managing editor also a volunteer position or
no? The managers of the sites, like myself, we do get paid. We get a stipend of some sort. It varies depending on size of the blog, and I'm sure there's other factors that I have no clue about that are above my head and obviously above my pay grade. But I do get paid there, but it is extremely volunteer driven. And, you know, that's what makes it great, in my opinion, is that a lot of people want to write about this team and they want to share their opinions. And this is just a great avenue to get fans connected with one another and to share, you know, what they're passionate about, which is FC Dallas.
So do you do much of the covering of the team yourself, or do you leave that to your quote unquote underlings, or how does that work?
Yeah, I do a vast majority of coverage of the team, just because I've been around the team since, I guess, I moved here in 2007. So since around 2007, 2008. So I have a good relationship with the coaches there, some of the players, the front office staff, being embedded there with them enough that they're comfortable with me and I'm comfortable with them as far as, you know, securing interviews and doing things like that. But, you know, not to say that I don't have guys that get the opportunity to. We've had a handful of guys that have gone on to have internships at the team and some that have moved on to MLS, different kind of little side gigs here and there. Actually, mm-hmm. One of our guys this weekend for the RSL game, he'll be part of the social media coverage for the league. So there's a lot of little opportunities that pop up through this coverage. And I try to divvy it out as much as I can to other guys, just because I know some people, like this guy that's doing the social media stuff, Scott, he's way better at it than I am. And I want to give him that outlet. And it's worked out really well in that capacity.
Nice. So when you cover the games, like what, walk us through what's that like, just what's your game day routine normally for a home game?
Yeah. You know, especially for home games, I like to get there, you know, anywhere between an hour, hour and a half early, just to kind of, you know, get in, get my stuff ready at the, in the press box, in the stadium, and just, you know, take in some notes, you know, cause the teams always have prepackaged notes, for each game. So I like to dive into those a little bit if I haven't already online. And, you know, from there, it's just a matter of waiting for the game, just like everyone else. And then once it starts, it's all about just catching the flow of the game. Occasionally I'll be the guy that's actually running our Twitter account to try to, play by play. So if there's not a lot of crazy GIFs or, highlight clips, it probably means it's me running it. I'm usually not quick enough to grab all that stuff. We have other guys that are much better at it than I am. So, you can always just bear with me when I'm, you know, trying to get stuff out as quickly as I can, cause I'm trying to, you know, do that and also write a game recap while a game's going on and try to just catch the game as it's going. And, so there's, you know, there's a lot going on during the game to, you know, to pay attention to. And during the regular season, it's all always fun too. Cause I you know, having that first blog that I had that covered all of MLS, I still like to kind of peek in at other games if ones are on at the same time and just see what's going on around the league. Cause there's a lot that you can definitely miss while you're at the stadium in this league. Cause there's so many teams now and so many games going on at the same time. And so, you know, I'm trying, it probably helps that I have a little bit of ADD. And so I like to bounce around a little bit, but,
do they have all those games up on in the press box or do you?
No, usually it's mostly just, the stadium feed inside. There might be one TV that'll, be off to the side that'll have other games on, but usually it's just the FCD feed, which is fine. It makes it good for if you need to pop off to the restroom real quick and you don't want to miss anything. There's at least a couple of screens that you can catch and, at least hear things on the way too. So, you know, and then after the game, it's all about, you know, getting the interviews and, you know, hitting up Oscar's, press conference afterwards and just, you know, just catching the reaction and then trying to come up with stuff shortly after to, you know, feed everybody that is wanting to talk about the game, what they saw and what they liked and what they hated. And, the big moments that, you know, that need to be discussed.
So after the games, do you guys have to like rush to get stuff out or do you just kind of work on your own pace or how's that work?
We try to get at least like a general game recap of some sort up, you know, within the first couple hours of the game being over. Sometimes when the team's on the road, especially those late West Coast kicks in Portland or Seattle or Vancouver, it might be a few hours after that, just, you know, because it's the next morning. But generally, we try to get up as soon as we can, and mainly because we know people are looking, you know, people want to talk about the game, especially those that, you know, were either at the stadium or even those that weren't there. There's definitely a group of people that love talking immediately after the game, and we try to feed that to them.
Yeah, it's always good to see if like what you saw and experiences matches with everybody else. And sometimes Twitter is not the best place to go for that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I try to get stuff out on Twitter, at least during like press conferences and stuff. But I'm kind of like you. I'd rather just go and discuss it with people than try to put it in, I guess, what is it, 280 characters now? I mean,
right. A lot of nuance lost there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, a lot of tone and everything is lost. So I try to see people and, you know, get it out on paper if I can.
So you mentioned being at the press conferences and doing some interviews. What was your favorite interview that you've done?
Oh man. You know, if I had to go, I mean, I'm not trying to be a name dropper, but,
but that's my favorite, I'm actually kind of going for that here. So let's see if we get some name drops.
You know, over the years have either been, David Beckham or Thierry Henry. Those were definitely nice highlights for sure. Henry was at an all-star game in Kansas City that one kind of happened just kind of randomly because the Kansas City locker room is, for one thing, it's gorgeous. I mean, they did that facility really well. And, you know, after the game, I think they were playing Roma that year in the All-Star game. And, you know, everyone's, you know, trying to get certain players afterwards. I think at that game, a lot of people were trying to get, I want to say it was Omar Gonzalez, what they were trying to get. And, you know, I was trying to get Raul Fernandez because he was the lone FC Dallas player that was a part of that game. And he started that match and goal. And so I was trying to get him mm-hmm. first. And then, you know, people, I could see that people were talking to Donovan and Henri, and I was just kind of letting things go. And for one reason or another, everyone kind of congregated around Omar Gonzalez, and I saw Henri just by himself, and I was like, hey, this is my chance. Let's get over there and ask some questions. And, you know, he was cool about it. And he certainly took me up on some of those questions that I asked. And that was definitely a memorable experience. As far as like FC Dallas players go, I was always a huge fan of talking to George John when he was part of the team. The guy was a character, and he was just always a good interview. You know, in the last couple of years, you know, I tended to congregate, you know, guys like Victor Yola. He's always a good guy to talk to. Kellen's, you know, really easy to talk to. He's so knowledgeable about the game, and he usually gives fairly good quotes. So I mean, there's a lot of different guys that handle the interview process differently, and there's definitely been some good interviews over the years, and definitely some ones that you start recording, then you immediately think, yeah, this isn't going to go anywhere. And you hit stop. I had probably one or two of those with Breck Shea over the years, just cause he was never one to really talk, but
that's like every podcast for me.
Yeah.
So I asked Jason this question. I'll ask you. So if you could tell people one thing about Big D soccer that they may not know, what would that be?
Yeah, I would think it would be that it's a blog for the fans and by the fans. I mean, we're all the guys that write on the site are fans of the team, and they're just excited about the blog. They're excited about the team. They're excited about the game. And it's just, for me, it's a fun atmosphere to be around these guys that are so passionate about the team that they love. They get frustrated probably way more than I do about the way the team plays, just because I'm so used to being a little more neutral about things. But it's always fun to just see how passionate people are, and I would hope it shows more in our writing that, you know, we're really truly passionate about this team.
Yeah, I definitely can see that passion. It's always interesting when you get that mesh up of fans, passion, journalism, and all that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you guys are doing great work.
Thanks.
You're listening to the Dallas Soccer Show with Dustin Nation and Tristan Vick. Okay, so let's move on to our season preview. Let's go ahead and start with the players that we said goodbye to over the offseason. We said goodbye to Walker Zimmerman, Chris Seitz, Hernan Grana, Avi Morales, Atiba Harris, just to name a few. I think there were quite a few players that really didn't actually get much playing time that we just let go. Mm-hmm. Any of those surprising to you?
Well, I know a lot of people were taken back by the Walker Zimmerman trade, but to me that one was, I think that was a move they had to make, and it was a wise move in the sense of what they got back. I mean, sure. All that allocation money is definitely nothing to laugh about. And the fact that they were again able to flip that top allocation order spot to, now I'm blanking on who they traded it to.
Orlando?
Was it Orlando? Gosh, got to look that one up. But yeah, the fact that they were able to, you know, swap all that for, you know, almost $1 million in allocation money is pretty impressive. You know, especially for a guy that, I mean, when he had his moments of being healthy, you know, he was as good as a defender as anybody in the league, but the guy was banged up more times than we could count. And at some point, I think Oscar and the team just had to look at him and say, okay, is he one of our guys or is he not? And this was the time to sell because, you know, I think he had maybe one more year on his contract. So he was at some point going to get some offers, and they didn't want to lose him for nothing. And this was a good way to just, they knew where the MLS market was going on trades, and, you know, it was a time to bite. And, you know, I kind of commend them for it because they needed that allocation money, because the guys they brought in, some of those guys are TAM level signings, so they're not cheap. So they needed that TAM. The other guy that I was kind of sad to see go was Chris Seitz, just because he was a good dude and definitely a guy you wanted in the locker room and just around the team. He was just a all around good guy. And to see him go to Houston, just it kind of is a little bit of a gut punch, but you know, he's going to do well there. I could see him starting quite a few games for them. And I know he's done well in preseason, so it's kind of hard to root for him, but at the same time, you kind of want to just because of who he is. But you know,
I think it's okay to root for a player, but not a team.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you know, and overall, the guys that they cut or didn't bring back, you know, I don't think they're going to miss too many of them. I mean, you might miss, you know, a guy like Atiba Harris, just again, because he's a good guy, good locker room guy. But
good guy Atiba.
Yeah, exactly. We love good guy Atiba on our site. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to look at what he was bringing, and he's getting older. And, you know, the game and the league is getting younger. And so they had to continue to, you know, stay the course with the youth movement. And I think they did. I think the fact that they got as many new guys at the ages that they got them at is a good sign that they're recommitting themselves to this youth movement again.
Yeah. Very well put, sir. Let's move on to incoming players. All right. So we'll start with the super draft. All right. So we got Francis Atuahene. I'm going to butcher all these. So if I,
go for
please
it.
Correct me.
I'm probably the same way.
Francis, I'm the guy who called Santiago Mascara. I called him Harold in the last episode. So,
well, I mean that is his name, so it's not too terrible.
I was ridiculed for it by Tristan. Francis Atuahene, Emma Tuamasi, Marco Sachera, Chris Lima, and a couple other guys, Cesarevich and Franca. So, as a group, what do you make of them?
You know, it was a really bold draft by Dallas to trade up and get out of Henny and, you know, keep that 11th pick with Tomasi. You know, they're both very similar players, very fast, very in some ways raw in the way they play on the wings. But definitely guys that I think Oscar can mold, which is good. And Chichero, he's definitely a guy that, I mean, he's injured right now. I know Fernando Clavijo has said a couple times in interviews that they're just going to basically try to keep him on an injury reserve list of some sort. I don't think they're signing him, but you know, they'll hold his draft rights, which is good enough. And he was one of those guys. If you watched SMU play last fall, he was a very talented player on the field. It was a shame that he, you know, picked up the knee injury that he did when he did.
I think he had something like 20 goals.
I don't know if it was that many, but it was definitely one of those seasons where it was 9 or 10 goals, 9 or 10 assists, something just really good. And, you know, it was a good SMU team that did, you know, that was first year in a while that SMU's had a team quite like that. And he was definitely the reason in the attack. You know, and then the other guys they drafted were, you know, interesting players, but ones that I doubt are going to make the roster in the, you know, when we come to March 3rd or, you know, any other time of the year, but you know, they could pop up at a USL team if they're able to. I wouldn't be surprised if Oklahoma City takes a sniff at a couple of those guys, because they were they definitely had a decent preseason and definitely at least pushed some of the guys above them in the pecking order, which is what you want, you know, out of those kind of rookies.
Yeah. Do you think any of them will see any significant playing time this season, or do you think that they're going to try to, like you said, farm them off to Oklahoma City? Or,
you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Oklahoma City. Just because the last couple of years, it's, you know, the first year they had it, you know, they used it pretty well with Coy Kraft and then Colin Bonner and Timo Pitter. I mean, they moved those guys out there, but then they didn't really do a lot after that. I mean, last season, I think Kraft got a few games up there, and then they never touched Oklahoma City at all. They were sending guys to Tulsa and Orange County. And, you know, it was interesting to see how that shook out last year. But, you know, obviously a lot with those MLS USL agreement comes down to the coaching staff at the USL team. And I think at some point they just weren't on the same page as the OKC staff last season. But now that, you know, they got a new coach there, and you know, they were down here in Dallas quite a bit during preseason. So they saw some of these guys, and you know, it wouldn't be surprising if, you know, Chris Leem or Noah Frankie get signed by OKC, and you know, they might end up somewhere else too. But as far as the guys that are signed, the two Generation Diaz guys, you know, I could see one of them, probably Tomasi, go to Oklahoma City for a few games. It makes sense, you know, for playing time purposes, because he's a winger, and you know, right now our wing depth is, you know, pretty stacked. So, you know, finding playing time for him might be pretty tough early on. But also know those loans, you know, to the USL, it's a numbers game, mainly for practice reasons. You know, I've always asked, you know, why more guys haven't been loaned out, and it always comes down to, you know, they need bodies in practice. And if those bodies are, you know, away on loan, you know, they might not be practicing the same way. And so it's better to keep some guys home, have them practicing, have them in the rhythm of the team, than, you know, traveling and being away and not, you know, necessarily contributing the way that, you know, Oscar wants them to. So it's one of those tricky balances that they have to figure out. And I think they'll reestablish it better this season. But I know everyone's just hoping that 2019 is the year of the USL team for FC Dallas.
Yeah, that's a different subject for a different episode, I think. lot to dive into there. What about Atawahene? He broke his arm in like the first 20 minutes of against University of Tulsa. What's the status on him?
Yeah, he's at least been back with the team. He was in Arizona. Definitely has a cast on right now. So I think he couldn't play for at least a couple weeks, but yeah, it's one of those, I think it was one of those kind of fortunate injuries in a way that it wasn't anything on his legs. It was just, you know, just an arm kind of thing. And, you know, you can play, a lot of guys have played with a cast, and he'll probably keep some kind of cast or some protective sleeve on it for most of the season, just to, you know, for the precautionary reasons. But I would imagine, you know, by the middle of March, we'll definitely see him more in training, and, you know, who knows, maybe even sniffing a roster here and there. Cause I think he's certainly got the talent to make things interesting for Oscar Pereira in terms of who he brings to a game day roster each week.
Gotcha. Yeah. I see him getting, like you said, getting a sniff, right around the time the opening rounds of the Open Cup.
And, oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then maybe trying to force his way in there and make life difficult for, Poppy. All right. So, moving on from the draft, let's talk about the homegrowns. We've signed Brandon Cervenia, Chris Reeves, and Jordan Cano on homegrown contracts. What do you make of those three? Namely, which of the three do you think will make a first team impact this year, next year, in the future? And which ones do you think are signed just to keep us from losing them?
You know, I think, you know, as far as Reeves and Cano go, I mean, they were guys that were system guys. They've been in the academy system and school for a long time. So I feel like I've talked about them a lot. I was kind of blunt after they signed that I kind of forgot they were even still in school, because it had been so long since they were a part of, you know, one of the academy teams that had done well years past. But they're both good talents, and they're both very versatile defenders. Reeves is one that I've always been intrigued by, because he can play in the middle, he can play outside, and he's got just a good IQ about him on the ball. I remember seeing some of his Wake Forest games his freshman and sophomore year, and he was one of the guys that just he seemed to have just a slightly different level on the outside than some guys in college. And then you got Cervenia, and he's definitely more of the real deal as far as the young guys go in my book, because he was a guy that really led that Wake Forest team last year. I mean, they had a lot of talent on that team, but if you watch some of their games, he was the kind of guy that he was quiet, but quite good, in the sense that he was always kind of picking and choosing the passes and finding the guys that needed the ball, and just kind of facilitating a lot of the things, which is good, because, you know, they definitely needed that central midfield depth. Not to say that, you know, guys above him aren't playing well or anything like that, but he's going to be a guy that's really going to be fun to watch, because I think out of all the homegrowns that have been kind of sniffing the game day roster, so to speak, he's one that will probably be a little more, in my, at least I'm hoping, a little more like Kellen was, in the sense that once he gets to a roster, he's not going to let it go, and he's going to start making the starting lineups more frequently, depending on what kind of formation Oscar goes with. Because I think he's got that level of talent and that level of ability for that sustaining impact kind of thing that Kellen had. Kind of losing my train of thought about that one, but he's a guy that is definitely worth watching out for and just kind of keeping tabs with, because he definitely had a great season in college last fall. It was definitely a reason that Oscar and Fernando made sure to sign him, because he was going to be a guy that teams were watching out for overseas, and they had already lost a few big names, as we all know, in the last couple of years, and they didn't want to go down that route with him.
Yeah, I guess with Kellen out injured and maybe going out overseas in the summer.
Yeah, and that was I think part of the line of thinking with him was they know the time is coming pretty quickly on Kellen here in Dallas, and they just wanted to make sure there was a guy they felt good with, that they knew that they didn't have to overly spend too much money on, and you know, really, like I said, a system guy that they just trusted, and Brandon's certainly that. And he's, like I said, he's got the ability to fill in the shoes should Kellen leave, you know, in the next 6 months.
Looking at the positions that were signed between the homegrowns and the draft, something that Kevin Minkus from American Soccer Analysis said when we interviewed him that kind of stuck out to me is just the way teams are tending to grow their defense through homegrowns and the draft, and then go after, use their TAM to go after forwards. Do you know if that's, if Dallas is having a similar strategy, or is,
yeah, I mean, in a way that's kind of been, I feel like that's kind of an old MLS mentality. A lot of teams used to, and Dallas certainly was one of them, a team that would build defense through the draft, not necessarily homegrown talent through the defense, but definitely through the draft. I mean, you look back at their last, I don't know, 7-8 years worth of drafts, there's a lot of defensive talent in there. I mean, you got Matt Hedges, you got Zimmerman, Zach Lloyd, Bobby Warshaw, just to name a few. And those are guys that made impacts on the field, and teams that do well. I would say the teams that do well in the draft are the teams that are drafting very defensive players. New England had a few there for a while that were really good defensive picks. Trying to think of a few others off the top of my head. Philly had a couple good drafts, but they've kind of not panned out in the long run as far as defensive players go. I think mainly because most of them didn't last in Philadelphia, but they're, you know, good players nonetheless. But yeah, you know, as far as the homegrown side goes, you know, it really just varies what each team has in their system. You tend to see a lot more attacking players come in from the homegrown side. We certainly got a litany of young guys on our roster that are homegrown players that are forwards. You know, Jesus Ferreira and Paxton, and Ryan Reynolds, you know, for example, they're all really young players, you know, that are on the attacking side. Dallas is really unique in the sense that the depth they have in the academy system is just probably still a step above a lot of teams in MLS, to where they can really pick out whatever they want from their system at any position. And for the most part, it's going to work out pretty well for them. Other teams, they're a lot more choosy. You look at San Jose and Kansas City, Colorado, even. Those are teams that only have 3 or 4 homegrown signings in their history, where Dallas is on like 22 now. So, I mean, it's just,
yeah, that's crazy.
It's just a difference in systems in that case. And I still think the drafting defensively is a good strategy, because the attacking players that come out of college, there's usually only maybe 2 or 3 each year that are truly guys that you want to have and can kind of trust early on in their MLS career. But even then, it takes years, you know, sometimes even for some of these young guys to come out of college as attacking players and make a really good impact in MLS. I mean, there's really only probably a handful in the last few years that have really lived up to their hype. Like Darlington Nagbe is a good example. I mean, it took him even, you know, a couple of years in Portland to really show what he was worth. And I still don't know if he's truly shown what he's worth. I think Atlanta might get more out of him than Portland ever did. But, you know, the strategies in the draft, it comes down to what's in the draft, and it varies from year to year, just where the college soccer game has gone.
You'd written an article in January, I think, about the upcoming, like who's next on the homegrown watch list. Mm-hmm. If you had to pick one or two of them, which one do you think of, let's see, in the article you mentioned Brandon Terwiggy, Chris Richards, Dante Seeley, Ben Hale, and Chris Kappas. If you're Fernando Clavijo and Oscar, which one or two of those do you choose as your next homegrown?
I even felt like when I wrote it, I knew I was leaving out a lot of names. Just because that's the way it goes. There's just so many players they have. Terwiggy is definitely one that I think I was actually surprised he didn't get signed this year, simply because he's a good defensive kind of player, and he's got the pedigree behind him. He's won the national titles on both levels, actually, U16s and U18s. But the players they signed, you know, like Rio Ziegler and those guys, they kind of didn't really need him this year right away. And it's good. It's actually a good thing to have the fact that they can basically wait a year on him and let him develop a little bit more in college. I'm always a big fan of defensive players in general. So I always lean a little quicker towards them. I think it might be a couple more years on Ben Hill, just because of what they did this offseason as well. As far as the keepers go, I was surprised to see them sign a third keeper like they did last week and Cal Zobek. But between Zobek and Jimmy Maurer, I mean, those are two guys they were really familiar with and really comfortable with. And it kind of makes sense to leave a young guy like Ben Hill in college and let him continue to develop as well. But I could easily see them do something with Dante Seeley first, just kind of like they did with with Brian Reynolds. Really young player, really fascinating player that, you know, could get snatched up at some point by a foreign club. I think he's a long ways away from that kind of thing, but it's one of those guys that, you know, I feel like they value him pretty highly, just, you know, based on who he is. His dad was a player for the team, and he's done really well at the youth level. He's played up a couple age brackets for the last couple of years.
He's only 14, right?
Yeah, I think he's turned 15 now, but he's been playing up in the U17s for a while. So he's going to be ready before long. And they have a handful of guys like him that are just raw talents that eventually they're going to have to make a decision on. And I think we'll probably see more and more each year where we get these 2 to 3 signings each winter in the homegrown camp. And it's just so exciting and fascinating that they have the ability to do that.
Definitely. So we'll link to this article on our show notes and also on our Twitter if you are interested in seeing thoughts on each one of these guys. All right, so let's move on to the big name signings, or at least, you know, the non-homegrown or draft signings. Some of them are bigger than others. We brought in, like you were saying, Jimmy Maurer, Kyle Zobek, Anton Nedialkov, Rito Ziegler, Santi Mascara. I think everybody's the most excited about Mascara just because of the attack that he brings and the pace on the foil to Michael Barrios. But do you think that Rito Ziegler and Matt Hedges are going to be able to bring FC Dallas's defense back to one of the best in the league?
I mean, they're going to have to is kind of the way to answer it. They're going to have to. The thing we saw in preseason when Matt wasn't on the field, the defense was still kind of their 2017 self. They looked a little confused. They looked a little off. When he's on there, he's still, you know, a top defender in the league. But I do like what Ziegler brings. I think once he really does get acclimated, and same with Nedeljkovic, I think once they both get acclimated with MLS and, you know, with their teammates too. I mean, they're still, if you think about it, they're barely a month into being here. And so it just takes a little bit more time before these kind of guys are really acclimated with their team and in this league. And we all know this league is a challenging one for a lot of foreign players to get comfortable in.
A lot of travel
that they're just not used to, and just, you know, different environments. I mean, you look at the weather right now across the country. It can be, you could go to Colorado and it's snowing 10 degrees. And then, you know, 4 days later, you have to go to LA and it's sunny and 75.
I wonder if anybody told them about Texas summers before they came.
Yeah. So at the jersey unveiling, I got to talk with Ziegler a little one-on-one, and I asked him, I was like, so what sold you on coming to Dallas? You know, it's hot. And he laughed a little bit. He's like, well, first and foremost, you know, I believe my abilities, my skills really match what this team wants to do and is going to do. And, you know, I was like, okay, that's great. But dude, it gets to be 100 degrees here, sometimes for weeks on end. How comfortable are you in heat? And he kind of grinned and said, well, I'm going to find out. And then that's about as good of an answer as I could get. But, you know, it's the truth. I mean, we've routinely stayed away from European players, I think, for that reason. But we brought in two guys that, you know, they're, like I said earlier, they're TAM level signings. I mean, that stuff hasn't really been released, but I've been told that they're more than likely on TAM contracts with the team. So they're the guys that are going to be expected to pull their weight and find a way to figure it out. I think those two for me are ones that are really going to either make or break this team this season. I know last year we leaned a lot on Lama and Coman, and they were make or break, and they damn well almost broke in some senses the attack.
Right.
So I think this year there was a lot of emphasis on the defense and how to rebuild it. And, you know, they went really defensive in their rebuild, you know, bringing those two guys in, signing the homegrowns that they did, drafting the way they did was very defense oriented. I think they realized they got away from that last year. And you could tell the way Oscar's kind of been going about it this preseason with the formation changes and trying to bring a little more emphasis on the wings. He knows he probably didn't do a few things right at the end of last year. And it was a lot of it came down to the players he had and the talent he had just wasn't getting it done. So I think, you know, those two guys have a lot on their shoulders, but so does Mascara. I mean, he's an exciting talent. And so far, I think a lot of fans have reason to be excited by him. The little bit we've seen has been very intriguing and very promising. I feel bad in a way for saying this, but the bar in some senses is fairly low for him in my mind, based on what Coman did a year ago. You know, he came in, you know, on a, you know, big transfer deal, you know, $2 million some dollar contract or whatever it was. And, you know, that first game he got a goal. It seemed like, great, you know, we're going to get a lot out of this guy. And then we saw nothing until, I think, July in terms of scoring. You know, and in that sense, for me, his Mascara's bar is pretty low. He doesn't have to, you know, score 20 goals or anything, but he's just got to score a couple more than Coleman did last year for me to feel like they actually got a little more out of him. And I think he will. He's a player that he's already in form. You know, he's coming off of a really good season in Colombia. I think this is a league that he'll flourish really well in. I don't think he's quite like a Fabian Castillo in the sense that he's got the speed, he's got the skill, but he's definitely got both. I think he's just got a little more IQ about him than Fabian did. And that's something that I think, at least I hope, Oscar's going to be able to utilize and get a lot out of. Especially with Mora Diaz, if he's if we know anything about Diaz, if he's healthy and engaged and he has players that he can create for, like he did with Castillo, he's going to love Mascara, because I think Mascara is going to work for him, just like Maxi Rudy does.
Yeah, those long through balls.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Nedyalkov here for a second. I'll ask you the same thing I've asked some other people. Cult hero in this time next year or no?
I think so. I mean, he's already establishing himself pretty well in that boat. I think, you know, we've never had an Eastern European, and there's something about just his mentality of play that I think is going to thrive really well with the supporters.
Totally agree. Jimmy Maurer's gotten quite a bit of, let's just say he's one of the FCD social media darlings. You see him all over the FCD Twitter account and on their media stuff. Do you think that he will be an able backup for Jesse? And do you think that Jesse has to worry about Jimmy come maybe making a play for that opening spot?
You know, I could easily see Jimmy making a play. He's a talented keeper. He's comfortable in our system, which I think is key. In the sense that he's worked with our coaches before and they've worked with him over many years in the past, which is a good thing to have as far as for your backup, just a guy that you're very comfortable with. You know, thing about Jesse, you know, I feel like he's at a point in his career where he's got to make that next leap, just in terms of his growth, his IQ on the field, just what he does in general on, you know, for the team, whether that's, you know, being more of a vocal leader, just being a guy that just steps up when the team needs him. I feel like we saw glimpses of that last year. I remember that Orlando game where he was basically saving a goal on his head and on his back and everywhere in between. And, you know, he's got that ability to do it. It's just a matter of him, I think, both wanting it and actually doing it is the key. Because we've seen in the past where Oscar's given him the keys to the kingdom and 4 or 5 games in, he blows it and he gives up a lot of crap goals and just situations that he has no business, you know, giving up, and his backup takes over and, you know, and then he struggles to get back. So this is, in a way, this is a big year for Jesse where he, you know, he really is the guy in goal and he's got to prove it and he's got to make sure he doesn't give it up by an inch or anything at all. Cause you know, Jimmy's capable. He did well in the NASL. I know that's a, you know, second division league, or at least it was, but he was a talented keeper and he's, I think, ready to prove that he's an MLS caliber keeper. And that's the kind of competition you want out of your keepers is two guys that are just going to battle for it. But it's going to be an interesting ride, just in the sense that you got a guy that really wants it and you got a guy that really can't lose it, in my opinion.
Did you know he had a reality TV show?
if
you didn't know that, then.
I did. I actually didn't know that before they signed him. But now I'm sad that I know that, because I feel like that's going to be a storyline that we hear way too many times. And we're going to get really annoyed by it by summer if he's playing more frequently.
All right, so let's go ahead and move on to let's quickly hit some of the folks that are the players that are kind of stuck around and maybe getting a little bit more playing time this season. So let's start with Reggie. We've got one Champions League game under our belt. What are your thoughts on Reggie Cannon?
Yeah, I mean, he's another guy that a lot is being put on his shoulders to make things happen. He was a guy, too, that last season, a lot of us, myself included, were clamoring for to play more. And I think, you know, the fact that he only got like a single minute of play last season was really disappointing to us too. Especially when we saw what he was doing in preseason. I thought he had a lot of good moments in the various games, and I thought he had good moments last week against Turo. I mean, he certainly is still a guy that, you know, needs to develop and is going to have some shaky moments and some dicey moments where he gives up a run just like he did last week in that goal that they scored. I mean, it's just learning experiences that he needs. And as long as he grows from them, I still firmly believe he's got the talent to be an all-star caliber right back in this league. Developing right backs or right or left backs in general are not an easy task that MLS teams tend to take on. But he is one that has that ability to do it. And, you know, I'm excited to see where he goes, to be quite honest.
Me too. So is his backup going to be Hollingshead this year? Or do we have cover at right back?
You know, that will probably more like Chris Reeves or Jordan Canoe, or I mean, in some ways it'll probably be Hollingshead too. I mean, Oscar, as you know, loves to have a healthy rotation of players at all defensive positions. So, and who knows, it might even be a guy that is currently a midfielder that'll get converted too. We know Oscar loves to dive into those realms as well. I think we're a ways away from that, but yeah, I think you could probably make the case that Hollingshead is easily the number one backup, but he's also played a lot of stuff on the left side of the field this preseason too. So, you know, there's a healthy number of players that can compete for that spot, but it's definitely Jordan's to lose. I mean, Reggie's to lose.
For sure. So let's move on to Kellen Acosta. We talked about him a little bit earlier. You see him going this summer? And if so, do you think that his stock has fallen since last year, whenever we were maybe talking about seeing him go?
Yeah. You know, had he not, you know, just gotten out on this injury, I would have said, you know, easily summer. You know, it's going to happen probably after the World Cup. It still could happen in that time frame. I don't think his stock has risen anymore since last year. He definitely had a few bumpy moments, especially late in the season. You know, the fact that he's still heavily involved with the national team is a positive, though, for him. Teams overseas want national team caliber players, and that's going to help him. As long as he's still getting call-ups, I think it'll help motivate teams to look into him this summer. But part of me could also see him stick around for the entire season and then, you know, sign a pre-contract and leave in January. That wouldn't surprise me one bit, but I do think going into next season, we'll be talking about who is replacing Kellen Acosta.
Yeah. I think once he gets back from the surgery, he's got everything to gain by coming in and really, really making a statement with his play, because he really wants that Europe move and he's going to need to prove that he can handle it.
Yeah. And they're not going to stand in his way either, which is kind of, it stinks for the fan, but it's good that the team is going to honor whatever his wish is when it comes time to it.
Yeah. And so I'm a Liverpool fan. And when Coutinho was going over in January, I forget who had the quote, but basically, they said that, you know, managers come and go, players come and go, but fans are always there.
Yeah.
And if you just have to kind of get used to, you know, just know that pretty much everybody but you as a fan is passing through, and, you know, it does hurt sometimes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Maxi Arruti and Christian Coman. What's the point of Christian Coman? Every time he's left on the bench, I keep wondering, asking myself that.
Yeah, he's kind of turned into a little bit of an enigma, even for me. I mean, I still really want to see what he can do with Mauro Diaz on the field. I think the two of them would be a fun pairing, because I mean, Coman, his work rate is there. It's not necessarily to the same level as Maxi's, but he definitely finds a way to put his teammates in good spots. It's just, for whatever reason, his mental focus when it comes to scoring is just, it's either absent or gone on break or whatever. I can never figure out how he misses some of the shots that he misses. But I guess in a way he's got that, you know, Wayne Gretzky philosophy of you only miss the shots that you don't take or something like that. But I don't know. I mean, he seems like a guy that is happy here and the team is happy with, but yeah, it's just, it's a weird weird thing. I haven't quite put a finger on what he'll be this season for this team. And maybe it's a good thing that he's not going to be called to be that guy again this year.
Take a little of the pressure off of him.
Yeah. And that might actually, I think if he could get a little bit relaxed on the field, because I felt like last summer, especially when he got that goal in Montreal, you could see a little bit of weight come off his back and he started to play a little more relaxed. And I think if they could allow him to have that kind of relaxed mentality, he could end up being a good player, but I think he's a long way from that, what they expected to get out of him. And that was a guy that would score a lot of goals. I just haven't seen enough in him to really believe that he will be that guy.
Yeah. I think he makes smart runs, maybe even smarter than Maxie's, but I think this might be a case where just Oscar's comfortable with a Rudy.
Yeah.
He is. And so really, I mean, something drastic would have to happen in order to get Coleman in there on a regular basis.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So that is our run through of the players, the squad. But let's go ahead and do a quick dive into some of the things surrounding the team that aren't players and some of the things for the season ahead for the team. Overall, we've gone through the nitty gritty of each player. Overall, do you think FC Dallas is deep enough and with some of the spots where we mentioned the backups are some of our homegrown players, will the kids be enough this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's a valid question. I think in the West, the way things have gone this offseason in the Western Conference, I do think they are deep enough. Maybe not to win the entire conference, but I think they're deep enough to definitely be a team that contends. I don't know if that means a top four kind of contender or top six and, you know, be good enough for the playoffs. I think they will struggle at times during the season, just especially since the schedule is a little bit wonky this year because of Champions League and the amount of home games early on. But, you know, I do think the depth is, for some reason, it feels better than it was a year ago. And I felt really good about the depth going into last season. I was looking at some notes this morning from last year and, you know, I made some comments about, you know, I liked what we did in different spots. And but I actually feel a little more comfortable with the players they got this year. I think it's probably because of the type of defensive depth that they brought in. It's not older players returning or anything like that. It's new, fresh legs that can contribute. And that's, you know, Oscar's always been a guy that wants competition in every spot. And I do feel like, you know, outside of maybe a backup to Mauro Diaz, he's pretty much got that. And, you know, again, you know, speaking of Diaz, I still believe it comes down to him. If he's there and engaged for 34 games or even 28 good games out of Diaz would be a blessing to this team and the fans, simply because we know if he's engaged and energized and actually showing the effort that we know he can put out there, yeah, this team could end up being a really special team. But if he's not a part of it and he's not quite there for even the 28 games that I mentioned, this team will struggle again. And I don't think it'll be as painful as last year because of that summer swoon that they had, but it'll be
that turned into a second half of the season swoon.
Yeah. I really do think it'll be tough. There'll be some good moments, but there'll be more tough moments than anything else. It feels like a weird season than most for me, just in sense that there's a lot of question marks around the league, mainly because of the infusion of all this TAM and GAM and whatever AM is out there that we haven't heard about. That teams are just, they're finding different ways to build their rosters and do a lot of things. And the teams in the West, it feels like a lot of them are getting lapped by the teams in the East. You see what Atlanta's done in Toronto, even to a degree what Orlando did this winter, New York, in some cases, Columbus. those are teams that made a lot of good moves, and I'm not quite sure that any team in the West is really going to stand up to some of those teams in the East when it comes down to it, because he just didn't see the level of signings in our conference, that which might be good for FC Dallas, because I think you can make an argument that outside of two or three signings, you know, we didn't do a whole lot either. We signed a lot of young guys, and that can be dicey. So it's going to be an interesting season nonetheless.
For sure. So goes Diaz, so goes Dallas.
Oh, absolutely. As much as I want to say, as much, you know, as the defense plays well, so will Dallas. But I really do believe that it comes down to Diaz. If he's orchestrating things like we saw in parts of 2015 and 2016, this team will be fine, and we'll be a lot of happy people in the stands for the most part. But if he's not engaged, man, it's going to be a tough ride if he's not engaged.
So we saw in against Taro FC last week?
Yes.
Last Wednesday, when they showed the lineup, pretty much the only thing that changed from the end of last season as far as the midfielders and forwards go was Mascara playing on the left wing. And lo and behold, we didn't score again. Yeah. Do you think that this is something systematic? Do you think that Oscar's going to be able to get this figured out and take that group of players and kind of tweak them? Or do you think it's going to take something more drastic?
I think it's a reason why you're seeing him experiment with different formations so much. You know, going to a 3-4-3 or a 3-5-2 or whatever is the case, he's trying to find different ways to, you know, infuse wing play and have things a little more direct, you know, to the guys up top. And, you know, and really, I've long thought Maxi does better with a guy next to him in the attack. That's also because he's just such a hard worker, and he does well to keep other teams' defenses honest. But yeah, I mean, the attack is, it's still a question mark for this team, because the way things ended last year, where there was so many just middle mistakes and just, you know, zero energy out of the team, especially during that losing streak. You know, they got to find a way to, I guess, get their mojo back in that sense that they were early last year and the years before that. Because, I mean, if you think about it, this is a team that is still a very talented, especially that front six. That's a talented group of players that should be thriving against some defenses in this league. But again, you know, it really comes down to their mental state. If they're good to go, I think it'll happen for them before long. It's just a matter of if they're good to go or not.
Well, I certainly hope they get good to go pretty soon, especially because, like you mentioned earlier, we've got so many of those home games up front, and those are, I think, as we saw last season, it's really hard to win away games in the MLS. I think the only team that was really good at it was, I think, LA Galaxy last season. But with so many home games up front and, you know, some easy matchups coming, do you get a sense of urgency from the players and staff about, you know, really getting started and coming out swinging?
Yeah, I mean, you got, I think it's five of their first six at home, maybe even more than that. But I mean, anytime you have a long stretch of home games, there's going to be a definite sense of urgency to gobble up points. I know in the past, if they've had even a 3-game homestand, the message has always been, we got to get 9 points, or we got to get nothing less than, say, 6. Even if they're playing teams that are far better than they are, that's always a mentality at home in this league, is you get 3 at home, you go for the draw on the road, and you see what happens after that. So there'll definitely be some urgency. I mean, especially those first four are against conference opponents. You want to win those games against conference opponents, just because when it comes down to it at the end of the year, you saw, like last year, you know, 1 point is make or break at times in this league. And I'm sure it'll be the same this season. So you don't want to, you know, go into April with, you know, the four home game or three or four home games that you have in a row to start the season with 4 points or, you know, 5 points. You want, you know, 9 or 12 points out of those first four games. You want to make sure you have a good start to the season. Because if you don't, it's a long season and it'll grind you away if you had those chances and you blew them. I don't know how many times in the years past where they've had home games where they, you know, let a late goal slip and it ended up being a 1-1 draw. And that came back to bite them. There was probably a few last year that outside of that long losing streak that came back and bit them in the end, you know, so you got to make sure you make the most of those home games. And I'm sure they will. I'm sure they'll be up for them. They love playing at Toyota Stadium. And they know it'll be a little bit different this year with the South End finally being a little more finished and a few more fans sitting in the seats, hopefully. And so
cross his fingers.
So, I mean, hopefully they can get the job done. I mean, it's a long grind and they're going to have to find a way to do it. But they definitely don't want to wait until the summer to try to be scrounging up points with all those away games late in the season.
So let's go ahead and put you on the spot before we let you go. FC Dallas 2018 playoffs or no?
Yeah, I think they're a playoff team. Just like I said about the West, there's a lot of toss up in this conference. There's some good teams and then there's some teams that we have no idea about. And I think there's a couple teams last year that played above their level that made the playoffs and some teams that like Dallas, they should have been in the playoffs. So I think at the end, we might not be talking about a conference champion here, but I do think we're talking about a team that's going to at least be in the top six. I think they could be a top four team in the West if things go their way. Like I said, if Diaz shows up and the defense plays the way I think they can play, they're going to be a team that can make some noise. I think there's some injuries that have happened already in the West with Jordan Morris being out in Seattle that makes things a little more interesting and could help have some cards go in our favor. But this is a team that's, it's going to be an interesting season. And I do believe in the end, we're going to be looking at a team that's, at least in the playoffs, if not one that's fighting, you know, a long way into the season. And I really do hope we're back in the playoffs because, as much as I enjoy getting my weekends back late in the year, it felt weird not doing anything in November last year.
Well, I certainly hope you're right. Let's one more Champions League. Do we pull it out on Wednesday? And if so, how far do we go?
Yeah, you know, I think coming home will be good. Toro's going to bunker. I think they can expect that out of the gate. We saw a little bit of that last week in Panama once they got that goal. If they can come out early in the first 15, 20 minutes, find some chances, pressure them, get a goal themselves. It'll be their series to lose, really. As far as advancing, the next round probably won't be easy. It should be a game against or a series against Club America. And they looked really good in their opening game against Saprissa. So,
you going to go to Stadium Azteca?
I mean, that would be fun to go down to, but I don't think I can make that swing. But they, you know, Dallas is one of the few MLS teams that's won in Mexico over the years. So anything can happen in the Champions League. I don't think their run will extend past the next series, just where this team's at and who they could potentially play. But, you know, weirder things have happened in CONCACAF Champions League in the past. So it's hard to tell, but I think we'll at least advance after tomorrow night or Wednesday night. And that's a plus. I just don't think this team's quite there to get any further.
Excellent. All right. Well, before you go, do you have anything you want to plug or anything? How can people get, follow you and all that stuff?
Yeah. I mean, Big D Soccer is always on. It's always there. Follow us both there on Twitter. I guess if you want to like our page on Facebook, you're more than welcome to. We don't really do a ton on Facebook, so can't really say too much about that. But yeah, we're always trying to put out fun stuff. We've got our own staff team previews and season predictions ahead this week, and plenty of content on the horizon as the season draws near. You can find me on Twitter on WV Hooligan. I try to have good tweets every now and then, try not to say anything crazy. Can't always promise that.
Oh man, thank you for coming on, and this was a great conversation, and I enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on.